County cricket, international cricket, test cricket, franchise cricket, red ball, white ball, 100-ball cricket. At The Cricketer, we care about the cricket you love. And that's why we've launched a brand new app built for fans of the English game. Download The Cricketer app and sign up to our Access All Areas Pass to receive agenda-setting journalism and illuminating storytelling straight to your phone. The latest news from the England camps, a dedicated daily service for fans of the 18 first-class counties, and committed coverage of women's cricket. Download the app today and enjoy 1 month of free unlimited access. The Cricketer. We care about the cricket you love.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka The Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left for tonight's special episode of TCCP is none other than up-and-coming Middlesex County Cricket Club seam bowler, Ethan Bamber. So Ethan, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining me here on the podcast tonight. It's an absolute pleasure to get you on for a chat about all things county cricket. I have to ask, mate, how's your day been so far?
Well, good evening. Thanks very much for having me. It's been good, actually. But rather boringly, everyone's sick of it. I'm isolating for COVID. So this is hopefully my last day, my second last day. But I'm very lucky. I've got some outside space. I've got like food and TV. And so I've, all things considered, been good and no symptoms. So yeah, just been chilling around really. I'm like a middle-aged man at the best of times. So just, this is perfect. It suits me very well. Yeah.
It's funny you mention that because I suppose this week, more than any other week, for those who don't know, in the UK, so many storms. I think we've had three back-to-back-to-back storms. It's been absolutely horrible across the country. I suppose you haven't really missed a lot this week, Ethan.
Yeah, no, well, I mean, you don't feel it too much in the house. We had a week off and me and my girlfriend were meant to go to Rome, actually. So that was a bit of a stinker. I got pinned. Yeah, the positive test came on the pre-flight test. So that was a real shame. But in terms of like missing nice weather outside, no, I've just been hunkering down and watching the trees blow.
Yeah, same here, to be honest. I mean, by us in Warwickshire, for those who don't know the geography of the UK, Warwickshire is landlocked. So we're not by the beach. We don't have like some massive sea next to us, the Irish Sea or the North Sea. We are basically as far inland as any other county. I saw the trees outside. I've never seen this in Warwickshire. They were at like a 40 to 45 degree angle. I thought they were going to topple over, to be honest, at one point.
My bins kept running off down the street, but I'm like chasing after them in a mask, like trying not to get near people. Oh, it's a bit of a shambles, really.
Honestly, that's just the British weather, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let's face it, during winter, we always have these in February time. It's absolutely horrible, but fortunately, we aren't here to talk about the atrocious weather here in the British Isles. We are, of course, here to talk about county cricket. And of course, with any journey, we have to start right at the beginning, the origin of the tale itself. So, Ethan, what were your first ever memories of cricket, either playing or watching this spectacular game?
My first memories of cricket are... Well, they'd definitely be watching my brother. I kind of owe him everything cricket-wise. He taught me how to play when I was way, way younger, with like maybe 6 or 7 in our back garden when we lived in Cambridge. And then I'd say my first memories were like maybe playing a little bit around that kind of age, 7, 8. And then I was always like quite big for my age. So growing up then, I think I thought I was really good, but I was actually rubbish looking back just because I was, I thought I was a bit bigger than people. And then my first proper memories, I'd say, when we moved back to London, I was like 11, 12, playing at North Middlesex. We moved onto the road, like just behind the club. And there, that's where I met like Luke Coleman, Joe Cracknell, Max Harris, who now on the Middlesex staff. And we all lived really close and used to be down there all the time. So that's probably like where I then started playing consistently. But, you know, my brother's to thank for introducing me to, as you say, to the great game. So.
Best sport on the planet.
Yes.
It is, isn't it? Let's be honest. And obviously, I'm incredibly biased as the host of the County Cricket Podcast.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. For those new to the podcast, you'll find there is something else in the world of cricket, aka Warwickshire, which I'm also very biased about. But honestly, it's just such a great game. It's given me so much joy, so much heartbreak, so much incredible excitement over the years. I just love the game. It's an incredible sport. Yes, it has its problems like any other, but at the same time, I don't think there is anything quite like the wonderful game of cricket. And you mentioned there, Ethan, about influences. And I'm guessing there a heavy family influence. You mentioned already your brother. But in terms of the professional game, did you have anyone in the domestic circuit or indeed the international stage beyond that who you tried to emulate and almost idolise in those most formative of years, per se?
I have thought about this a little bit before. I actually can't pinpoint one person like who, when I didn't really like cricket, I then became drawn to the game because of them. As I said, my brother was the biggest influence, like personal influence. My parents, hugely supportive and loving and great, but couldn't have been less interested in kind of team sport or, you know, they just liked whatever I liked to do. And now they love cricket, but only, you know, there was no pressure or nothing to like live up to in that sense from them. In terms of like influences, I don't think there was anyone I particularly watched. I remember when I first kind of started watching cricket more consistently, watching like that Somerset team that got to loads of the T20 finals, like Jos Buttler and Kieran Pollard and Kees Vetter. Me and my brother and Crackers actually used to sit on the sofa on finals day, and Mum would just like bring food all the day and just like watch all the games. So that was early memories. But no, as I got a bit older and started to like enjoy cricket more, I just love watching Steyn Bowl, Ryan Harris from Australia. So I know that's a bit later. Obviously, I would have been a bit older when they were playing, but they're the kind of people I think who, in terms of like emulating, one of your fellow countrymen, Chris Wokes, someone who I like enjoyed a lot when I was younger, like, and still, you know, he's so good. So yeah, I would say that a bit later on, not kind of one person who I tried to be.
No, it was multiple different sources, I suppose.
Yeah. I just enjoyed it.
That's the important thing, isn't it? The enjoyment in those early years. That's what feeds the love and the desire as, you know, your journey goes on in the game of cricket. But Ethan, you have mentioned right there, one of Warwickshire's finest sons. And of course, I'm going to take any excuse I can get to talk about the wizard, Christopher Roger Wokes, one of my absolute all-time favourite cricketers, stand-up bloke as well. Absolutely love
him. Have you had him on?
We haven't.
Oh, he's got to get on.
But one day, hopefully, fingers crossed, Chris, if you're watching or listening, the invite is definitely there. But in terms of your favourite Chris Wokes moment, Ethan, over the years, there's plenty to choose from. What would you say has been your standout moment of magic from the Warwickshire Wizard?
Yeah, this is terrible. I couldn't pinpoint one. I think I tried to copy his bowling action when I was younger because I thought it was like, you know, I like the look of it. So, oh, geez, I'm going to... It sounds awful to him because obviously he's had so many. I'm going to go with that line. There's so many I couldn't possibly choose.
Well, there are. And again, that's a testament to the man, isn't it?
What's your favourite?
See, this is the thing, Ethan. I was hesitant in terms of asking that because I knew you'd ask it me back.
Yeah.
There's so many to choose from. One of the most underrated Chris Wokes moments for me was that fateful ODI at Trent Bridge, the tied one against Sri Lanka when Liam Plunkett hit that last ball six.
Okay, yeah.
Chris Wokes hit 95 not out in that game, batting at number eight. And yet no one seems to appreciate that. He set that game up absolutely brilliantly. And then in terms of my other two, I suppose, the century at Lord's, which has now got its own song, to be honest, the one against India in 2018. And the final one, because I was there for this game, I'll never, ever forget it, the 2019 World Cup semi-final at Edgbaston, when he dismissed David Warner.
Oh, yeah.
Pandemonium. Absolute chaos in the RES Wyatt stand. I was almost falling over chairs. It was absolutely insane. Honestly, some of the best celebrations I've ever seen in cricket. On that day, when he got David Warner out, he started pumping the fists and Edgbaston just erupted. It was incredible. So plenty to choose from. It was a tough question, Ethan. I do apologise for that.
No. That's unbelievable. I've got one which just reminded me, this is showing what a cricket tragic I am. That same game, India Lords, I think he nicked off Kohli, second slip dropped, and then next ball got him again, and I thought that was cool. So there's mine.
Great choice, and obviously I'm not going to oppose that. There's so many we could choose from, but as I said, Chris, if you're listening, we'll get you on the podcast, mate. That'll be an absolute pleasure. But you've mentioned there, actually, aside from the wizard Chris Wokes, you mentioned Ryan Harris, a name which doesn't get mentioned on the podcast. I really like that choice as a cricket great badger. Mm-hmm. Fantastic bowler. Absolutely nightmarish, wasn't he, over the years for Australia, played in the IPL as well. And then Dale Steyn, just the 440 test wickets. I mean, not a bad career at all for the Steyn gun. I'm guessing, Ethan, that you've always wanted to be a seam bowler then. Would I be correct in that assumption, given the fact that the likes of Wokes, Steyn, Harris were those kind of influences in those early years, or do you see that differently?
I think I might have chosen them because, like, as I kind of shifted more towards bowling, I then kind of like looked for bowlers who I liked watching. I think, to be honest, I was maybe drawn there by a lack of talent with the bat more than a love of bowling, but. I can't remember deciding at any point. At school and stuff, like, as everyone does, kind of all-rounder and do a bit of everything. But as soon as I kind of got to any decent level, I think I realised pretty quickly that, or I was told pretty quickly where my skills were needed. And I still have great ambitions with the bat. I've let myself down, I think, in my short career so far in terms of the performance I put in. I need to offer a lot more. And that's something I've worked very hard on this winter and hopefully can deliver it. Because I do enjoy batting. And also when you're batting, of course, you don't have to bowl. So
spoken like a true bowler.
Taught me that. Yeah. Remarkable focus.
That doesn't surprise me at all that came from Mertz either.
Yeah.
What a man. What a bowler. I mean, we'll talk a little bit about him and that Middlesex seam attack in due course. But Tim Murta, Ethan, before we talk about seam as an art form, I just have to ask, Tim Murta, the great man, someone who I saw take 5-4-19, I think it was, against England in 2019 at Lords, remarkable bowler. what were your first impressions of him? I'd love to know, when you first walked into that Middlesex dressing room, what were your first kind of impressions of Tim Murta?
I was very like, I think it's my interest in the game and my character. I was very nervous going into that dressing room. I saw these people who I'd watched on TV or heard so much about. And I don't think I probably spoke for a little while. My first interaction with Tim was actually at my first ever second team game at Merchant Taylors. I think I was 16. And he was playing just, you know, as a casual warm-up before the championship. And it was kind of the biggest game of my life. And I was arrived kind of quaking in the morning, and he was just so nice. Like, he's a lovely bloke, he's really funny, but everyone there, all of those senior players, Toby, Stephen Finn, James Harris, particularly Tom Helm, obviously a bit younger but much senior to me, I mean, you could not ask for a more welcoming group of people, generous with their time and knowledge, and, you know, to see those people who are kind of revered and to talk to them and they talk to you just like another person, not in it with any kind of airs or graces, was, I think, a great lesson in me in how to behave and how now I'm maybe a little older, by no means senior, but, you know, guys coming off the academy and seeing them, I, you know, if I could do half as good a job with them as they did with me. It was really a great bank of knowledge and also just kind of an emotional space to come into. They were they couldn't have been nicer and more welcoming. And yeah, so Tim was good. He is good. He's fine.
He certainly seems like it. Again, we'll have to get Tim on the podcast one day as well, Ethan. And yeah, that's lovely to hear as well, the fact that that group, the senior group, were so welcoming, and they clearly put you on the right path then in those early days for the Saxes.
Yeah, well, as I say, they're just like super supportive. He would be a lot better value than me. You should get him on. He's, that'd be good. But Yeah, no, I'm not sure. It was quite a weird, like, how I started playing. Was at the end, there was a lot of injuries and Richard Scott had left and then all of over whirlwind. But, like, everyone was just so, yeah, I can't remember anything. I don't know if that's because I was just in my bubble, but in terms of just sharing knowledge or whatever, and, like, Roger and Mertz take the piss out of me relentlessly because I, like, chunter away to myself when I'm bowling and I'm quite, like, intense. And they're just so the opposite. They're so, like, relaxed on the field. And I think they find that me a great source of amusement and can push my buttons very easily. Yeah, moving fielders and all sorts.
It's funny you mention that, actually. I would like to know this, Ethan, because obviously the world of the seam bowler, you do have that additional aggression, don't you? It does come out from time to time. It is that more primal art form, I suppose, as opposed to spin bowling at times. You do see white line fever. I have to ask, Ethan, because you don't seem like the person to get white line fever, but do you sometimes slip into it in a competitive match day environment?
Yeah, I think, I don't know if it's, I get pretty competitive and I get pretty frustrated. And I think anyone who's played with me or trained even with me know that I don't always get that balance right. I sometimes get a bit frustrated. But I think actually one of the things I'm trying to work on is being more, I think I have some good days when, like, I'm really on it, and I have some days when I drift a bit and maybe I'm not quite so in that battle. And because I think you do need to be, you know, you've got to trust that people know that you're a good person off the pitch, but actually when you're on there, you've got a job to do. And that's something I think I do need to get better at. I take a lot more of the anger out on myself than I do on, you know, the people I'm playing against. And I think maybe that balance needs to shift a little bit. You see the great players, like, everyone says they're great people off the pitch, but on the pitch, they don't really give an inch. And if I want to continue to improve, then definitely that is an area. Like Rojo's great at it, for example. He'll just be like joking away mid off, but then when he bowls, he's like, bam, in the zone. So yeah, something to try and get better at. But I've got a bit in me, I think. Yeah,
but you have to as a seam bowler. You have to. And it's funny you mentioned there about famous examples. One of the biggest examples that I would have would be Mitchell Johnson. Because if you only ever saw Mitchell Johnson, the competitor, he was basically arch enemy number one here in England, wasn't he? During the Ashes series, he was absolutely vilified because of the way in which he was acting on the field. Away from it, though, he is a completely different person. And that's something which I think is important for us as fans to realise. You have to separate the person from the player because you are almost two different personalities at times because you're in that pressurized competitive environment. Would you agree with that, Ethan, as an assessment?
I would definitely agree that I think people take on a different persona in some cases when they go onto the pitch, and there is like something about the nature of sport that enables people to really push the edges of their emotion in a way that's kind of acceptable. And it should always be acceptable or should always stay in those realms. I would just question one thing, which I think sometimes fans see a separation too much between people and player, and the player turns into almost like a performing monkey almost. And actually, I think it's important that people watching the game remember that people playing the game are also people. And of course, there's always going to be, and it's one of the great things about playing sport that people watch is the interaction with the fans and the abuse and the support and the cheering and stuff. But I haven't been subject to a lot of it because I haven't played in many big games, but I find it difficult to kind of to see the behaviour of some fans towards players who, if they walk down the street, would never ever say that to their face. But they think somehow because they're 10 metres away behind a rope. So I think there needs to be a balance struck there. But definitely, I think as a competitor, when you walk onto the pitch, it's like almost being an actor. I think you go onto stage and you inhabit your character, and I think that's really important. And I think some of the best players are able to do that. And I was just watching that documentary about Shane Warne, And he talks about that at great length, and was obviously a great showman and stuff. Not everyone's going to be like that. But that was really interesting to see him and the kind of, yeah, two sides of the coin, I suppose.
Yeah, it's a good documentary, that. Very, very good documentary. I think it's on Amazon Prime, isn't it, at the moment?
Yeah.
Not sure. Yeah, honestly, definitely worth a watch for any cricket badgers out there. But Ethan, just before we go into the conversation about seam bowling, actually, I'm glad you brought that point up with regards to fan behaviour at times, because we had an entire episode basically dedicated in particular to social media and the impact that that has on players. We spoke with Tom Lace. He was copping it at some points when he moved to Gloucestershire, and some fans were...
Leipzig, did you say?
Yep.
Yeah.
And he got publicly defended by Chris Dent in what was a fantastic display of leadership, in my personal opinion. I suppose the question I wanted to ask, Ethan, is what's your relationship like with social media? Because I suppose in the modern world, right now, that is an additional pressure on the modern cricketer. It's something which cricketers in the 70s or the 80s wouldn't have had. As we all know on social media, in particular on Twitter, and Twitter is a platform that I love and use regularly, but at times people do overstep the mark, and absolutely everybody at times has an opinion. What do you kind of make of social media in terms of the role, in terms of the influence that it has on the modern county cricketer in particular?
Oh, gosh. I'd say from my personal experience of it is fairly kind of benign. I think obviously I don't have a great like profile, so I'm not someone who's in the scrutiny a lot. And I think when you come through as a young player and you do okay, or you have some like decent performances, people are very quick to pump you up, etc., etc. I think it's important obviously to remember that they'll be just as quick to drag you down as well when it doesn't go so well. My personal experience, I have a private Instagram account. I have I don't really use my Facebook except for Messenger, and I don't have Twitter, so I'm quite I enjoy it, and I love seeing what my mates are up to, honestly, really. And every now and then I like putting a photo up for a bit of an ego kick and a few likes, not quite as many as I'd like, so anyone out there who doesn't like my photos. I don't interact with it that regularly. I scroll too much, probably like everyone. I think in a wider context, I think it's really difficult because obviously it's kind of pervasive in a way that nothing else has been in the past, in that you really can't get away from it. It's not like putting down a newspaper or turning off the TV. Our phones are our kind of lives now, for better or for worse, and it's there and accessible. I would just ask people, not that I'm in a position to, but just before they write, just to take one breath and think whether they'd like to read that and whether it's helpful. Most people will listen to this will probably be like, what a stupid thing to say. And that may be the case. But I just think, yeah. So I've heard that stupid, would you, if your mum read it, that you'd written something, would she be, how would she feel? And I don't know, maybe that's a good way to think about it. But I think if we can all just use it with a little bit more thought and respect, then it's probably, we'll be able to access more of the best of it, I would say.
Well, to be honest, Ethan, I would agree with that. Absolutely. I mentioned this actually in the episode with Tom Lace himself. The fact is, with social media, it's a fantastic tool. And obviously, I say that as a podcast host, social media is my main way of getting guests. And yeah. I've always thought with social media, there is that fine line, there is that balance, because sometimes criticism is necessary. We've had criticism here at the podcast. We've had, it's mostly I've had criticism in terms of my presenting style as well when I do TV and radio work. But the fact is, there is nothing better than constructive criticism, which aim is to help you out in the long run. And if you take it on board and you improve, fantastic. The issue that I have sometimes with social media is the empty criticism. It's criticism for criticism's sake, or alternatively for that, it's just abuse. It's just expletive after expletive. It's not helping. And that is the thing, when you mentioned earlier about there is a human behind the cricketer, we need to stop looking at professional sports people as purely sports people and entertainers. They're people. They're normal people, in particular in cricket, with county cricket in particular. And I know this now, having done 160 episodes of this podcast, Every single one of you in the circuit seems so normal, to be completely honest, and yet you do incredible things on a cricket field, but you're still people. You've still got a family life. You've still got interests and exciting things outside of the game of cricket. It's important for us as fans, and this is mostly for the fans, to realise that and to just take that on board. So, Ethan, you say there about people dismissing it. I don't think we should dismiss it. I think that should be something that we as fans take on board, we learn from. And that doesn't mean, again, that you can't criticise people, because some things do need to be criticised. What it does mean, though, is it's not incessant, it's not abusive. And I suppose in the end, it's a bit more helpful. That's what we want to get at when it comes to social media, as opposed to just this torrent of expletives and abuse. But that is just my personal opinion. I imagine some people out there who use social media differently may disagree with that. And that's absolutely fine.
Sorry, no, I think you make an important point, because it does go both ways. And it's fantastic that we have a forum as a kind of society where you can express your views and stuff. And I think it's really important. And it's as a player in county cricket, it's nice to see that people care. I like that. I think, as you say, that the line is when it's malicious and kind of that kind of vitriolic language is not helpful to anyone. I think if you spoke to a lot of professional sports people or professionals in any field, they're actually very introspective and would really appreciate feedback and commentary if given in the right way, if it was in a, you know, in the right time and place. But there's obviously a way of doing that. And I think the kind of anonymity of social media allows people to get away with doing it in a way that isn't helpful and isn't respectful. So I think you kind of sum it up pretty nicely.
Well, thank you, Ethan. Again, it's something which, to be honest, I do quite clearly feel quite passionately about, because I'm listening to Tom Lace, and some of the things he went through his social media were absolutely horrible. And bear in mind that Tom Lace is playing just county cricket. Imagine that on an international stage as well. Yeah. We saw that with Dom Sibley. Again, I'm not going to get into a tangent with that, but some of the things that he suffered on social media, absolutely terrible as well. But again, just the thing to take away from tonight's conversation, or at least this particular segment for us as fans, let's just tone it down a little bit. That's all I'll say. And just remember that cricketers are human beings and not these demigods that sometimes we think them as. But talking about... Well, no, exactly. You're all incredibly normal, and that's why I love the podcast. It makes it 10 times easier. But talking of county cricket then, Ethan, in particular, because we haven't actually spoken too much about Middlesex just yet. And that's what I wanted tonight to mainly revolve around, because Middlesex, a massive club. You play at the home of cricket, Lord's Cricket Ground. You also play at some lovely outgrounds. Merchant Taylors is absolutely fantastic. Uxbridge as well, which we haven't seen for a few years, but hopefully it'll be back soon. In terms of Middlesex as a club, before we get on to the playing days, I suppose, Ethan, what are your first ever memories of the Saxes? What can you remember from those early days for the London club?
My first memory of Middlesex is actually my first memory of going to a cricket match is my brother taking me. We live maybe like 25 minutes away from Lord's in North London. My brother's 7 years older than me, took me there and said, come on, we're going down to Lord's. Andrew Strauss is on like 180, not out. I didn't really understand cricket that much at this point. But he was like, he's never scored a double hundred in first class cricket. We're going to go and watch. And it was kind of a grey day, if I can remember. And they were playing right over on one side of the square. And he kind of like maybe cut one or like blocked one, and it rolled to this 30 metre boundary, and the kind of 50 people there like went berserk. And that was good. Chaminda Vass was playing that game. I only learned this later when I kind of worked out who these people were. So yeah, I guess that is my. And then maybe when I got into cricket, they won the 2020 World Cup, like the 2020 competition, and then went to those like the Stamford Times. That's kind of when I started to get a bit interested in cricket. So I guess yeah, that the pink shirts definitely stood out on me, and the mascot race and the panther, because that was a real highlight of my year. So that would be my earliest memories in Middlesex, I'd say. And maybe trialing for them when I was like 10, I didn't get in. And then I went to Bourne School in Cambridge and kind of, I think, forgot a bit about, was a little bit more vacant from it. And then maybe came back to it a bit later. Sorry, yeah. lost my train of thought. So, yeah.
It's interesting you mentioned there then, actually, about Middlesex and, first of all, the Panther. Because they used to be called the Middlesex Panthers, didn't they?
Pinky. Yeah, great man.
Pinky the Panther. What a name. Fantastic mascot as well. Iconic at the mascot race. But, yeah. Aside from from Pinky the Panther, I didn't think I'd be mentioning him on tonight's episode. But aside from that, you mentioned there about trialing for them. What kind of was the spark for you in terms of going on that professional journey then? Considering that you didn't get in that initial trial, was that almost further motivation, or did you have something else in your life which almost drove you to become a county cricketer in the first place?
I think it's a little bit of a story for context. I'll try and be as concise as possible. I didn't get in when I was 9. I then went away to boarding school from 9 to 13 and played cricket, loved cricket, etc., but was not really around any county. I was in Cambridge, so it wasn't really around any county cricket. And I was like, you know, average at school, whatever. Came back, loved cricket, played a lot of North Mid. And it was the first year of Middlesex's new strategy. They went to this like borough system. So you play like for your little borough. And then you go to like a little regional thing. And then the regional teams play in like a cricket week. We had like 5 days of cricket and 3 of them were rained out or something. And then from the regional team, we didn't win a game. And I literally don't think I got a wicket or a run. This isn't very good for the selection. I don't know why I got picked for this team, anyway. But I then got picked. They then picked like 12 people from the regional teams to play against the county under 14s, play 2 games. And I somehow got into that team. And then in the 2 games, I bowled horrendously badly, awfully. Awfully. And then somehow they must have seen something. Well, like maybe one of them wasn't too bad. And then they picked 2 guys to train with them in the winter on like under 15s. Then we trained like once every 2 weeks that winter. And then I got into the like wider summer squad and played like a few. We had a decent run that summer, got to the final. But I didn't like, I bowled like one of the players' dads, who actually recently passed away very sadly. He used to compile these beautiful books of all of Jack's years with Middlesex and like all the scorecards he would score. Stunning. And I've moved house and I was finally at the other day. And I literally bowled like 4 or 5 overs in each game, kind of first change, whatever. But like enjoyed it and then played like a couple of under 16 games when they were short. And it was a real shock for me then when I was put on the EPP. And I think that's when I decided, well, I remember having a conversation with my brother and I just said like, I want to try and be a cricketer. Like I love it. I love it. But I mean, I couldn't have been further away from that point. And I just remember saying to him, like, whatever happens, if I'm not good enough, that's fine. But I'm not going to be like I could have been. I'm either going to be a cricketer or not good enough. And I can accept that. I just said, like, I'm just going to give it everything for the next couple of, you know, for as long as I can, as long as I'm in the system. And I'm going to know one way or the other. And so that was quite a turning point, I think. Like, I wasn't very fit. I loved sport. I played hockey. I played rugby. Like, but I knew I needed to change. And being in that EPP environment under Alan Coleman and Rory Coote, who were really important for me and kind of just give me a little bit of belief, I think. And the other guys in that academy system as well. And then getting into the academy for my last 2 years at school. It all kind of, I don't know. I guess I had this like, strange, completely unfounded belief that like I would work hard and get somewhere, but there was no evidence really. Like I wasn't an outstanding performer at age group level or anything like that. So I think, yeah, it's testament to some people maybe seeing something that they thought was worth a punt and then being in the right place at the right time really. So I hope that makes some sense. That's a long answer to your question.
Yeah, perhaps not the most conventional route into Middlesex County Cricket Club.
No, it wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't. No, I think as you're getting into the, you've got me started. Getting into the age group system later, I think it's one of the best things that happened. I feel fortunate that I came to it that late because I think I came to it with an appreciation of what I had compared to what had been there before, and also with a real desire to be there. It wasn't just because I had always been there or because my parents wanted me to play, or it was really a choice I made when the opportunity presents itself to try and go for it. And I think coming into it late meant everything was a real, like, I don't know, it was really fresh and like exciting in a way that I wonder if you played for the under nines all the way through, it may have been a bit different. I don't know.
It's an interesting perspective to have, almost like not so much a chip on the shoulder, but an extra drive, I suppose, the extra motivation, because you hadn't got in initially. You'd gone in quite an unconventional route into that Middlesex side, but Ethan, it paid off, you know, which is pretty cool at the end of the day. You get to represent your local county. It's something which not many people get to say. I'll certainly never say it. Warwickshire won't be looking for someone with a village batting average of 11.5. And if they are, we're in a lot of trouble. So please, yeah. Please, Warwickshire, don't get that desperate. I prefer talking about cricket as opposed to playing it. My goodness, hopefully we're never that low. Oh, that'll be a dark day for cricket in Shakespeare's County. But in terms of your debut, Ethan, I always ask this to county cricketers because it's always a tremendously special day. And imagine for you, considering that was an unorthodox route into county cricket in the first place, but also aside from that, you've got that real local connection. Middlesex are your boyhood club, your boyhood county. You mentioned that fantastic story about Andrew Strauss earlier. What can you remember from that day, and just how special was it to walk out onto that field for the very first time as a player for Middlesex County Cricket Club?
Yeah, it was pretty... Well, it's still the whole experience, to be honest. And I know there are people who say that, oh, he's just kind of trying to paint a certain picture. It does feel very surreal that this is my job and that, you know, you get to go out there and play. That day, I don't remember in great detail. I remember there was a bit of like upheaval at the club. The former coach left, a lot of injuries. I was playing a second team game. Got told that I was in the squad. I did not think I'd play. Turned up at Northampton. It was in the year when the away team, there didn't have to be a toss. Turned up at Northampton. Generally, this pitch is like so green. I cannot describe to you how green this thing was. Like the day before. And we had like five seamers there and a spinner. And I just remember like went out for dinner that night with a couple of the younger guys. And then I remember it was actually, we went to a pub to watch football. Classic. And I just remember Nick Gubbin saying to me, he was like, you should get ready to play tomorrow. And I was like, that's absolute rubbish. No chance. And then anyway, like about 10:15, Mala came up to me and was just like, you're playing. I was like, oh my God, okay. So I like ran upstairs, texted my mum and my brother, I think. And Thee got in the car and drove up with my best mate, Ed. Sorry, that's not that important, but I do remember that. And because I remember trying to like sort out tickets 20 minutes before we went out to bowl. I don't know if that was great preparation. And then I remember my first ball round the wicket to left-hander, down the arse, like crap ball. And then it took me, I got absolutely belted for like 20 overs. Vasconcelos got 165, batted really well. I was so out of my depth, I felt. And then he very kindly chopped on about 165, yeah. And that was my first wicket. But it's amazing, like, even then, like, the second innings, I just think, like, the improvement you make from playing, not necessarily in terms of, oh, look at me, how good I am now, but, you genuinely get better because you have to on the pitch if you want to even compete. Like, those first few overs I bowled were so far, looking back, you know, in reflection, were so far off the mark of even, like, a what was then a Division 2 county game. And it turned out to be a thriller, actually. We were made to follow on. And then we end up winning. Mertz obviously got 5 for. Jimmy Harris got 7 for in the first innings and 90. Maxi got 90. Yeah, it was good. It was great at Northampton, though. I remember that, grey and cold. Yeah, sorry. That was my debut.
It's a pretty good debut, isn't it, to be fair? And yeah, great recall. Really, really good recall in terms of dismissing Vasconcelos, yeah, chopping on. That was your first ever wicket in county.
It shows that all that goes through my mind is thoughts about myself and cricket, which is maybe not the best thing to admit.
I can relate to that, to be honest, especially on the podcast, since you just cricket revolving around there in my head as the podcast gets underway. But Ethan, in terms of the second innings, 3 for 38 from 15 overs, can you remember those three wickets?
Actually, I can, which is really embarrassing. Although it maybe is because I haven't taken that many in my life, so that's fine. It was Proctor, Ben Duckett, and then Rory Kleinfeld, LBW.
Even got the dismissal in there. I knew you were a cricket badger.
I am a badger, yeah. In a weird way, though, like, I don't like watch a lot of cricket, but I remember a lot about it. Just got to embrace it, I think. Just got to embrace it.
There is nothing wrong with being a cricket badger at all, Ethan. And actually, on the podcast, I really want to do this one day. I want to have a little bit of a cricket badger face-off between Mason Crane, who knows every single shirt number in county cricket, and Jack Carson. When we had Jack Carson on the podcast, he had taken 40 first-class wickets. He told me them in chronological order, so from 1 to 40, as well as the type of dismissal, he got 40 out of 40.
That's phenomenal. You should add Luke Holman to that list as a man who knows more about statistics than anyone I've ever met. He's a walking, like, it's incredible. It's quite a skill.
He was one of our first ever guests, to be fair, Luke Holman, so we'll have to get him on for another one.
Yeah, get him back. What a character.
Oh, great bloke. Great, great guy and a very promising cricketer as well. Leg spinning all-rounder from Middlesex. Oh. Definitely someone to watch out for. Viewers absolutely heading into the future. And Ethan, in terms of that debut, because you didn't just bowl, you also had a little bit of a cheeky bat as well. Can you remember your scores from that day, or those days, I suppose, at Wantage Road?
I got like 8 not out in the first innings. Or was I out? I was probably out. Now 8 not out in the first innings, and then like 19 in the second innings, I think. 17, 18?
Second innings, spot on. 19 from 40 balls. In the first innings, 2 not out. It's a red inker, though, at the end of
only
the day.
Only 2? Furious. I must have missed out on a few.
Well, to be fair, in that first innings, 6 balls. So,
oh, decent strike rate. Robbed of 100. I was on. Yeah.
What a game, though, and what a debut. Clearly a very memorable occasion, to say the least. And in the years that have followed, I suppose, Ethan, what would you say has been your real standout personal highlight from your time at the Saxes? Is there a particular moment, a particular game that really stands out to you from a playing perspective for the Saxes?
The first one that jumps to mind, maybe because it was from this summer, is going to sound very, may not be, or may come as a surprise rather, is actually the one day game we played this year at Lancashire. And we played, it was like in the middle of the 50-over comp. We had maybe like 1-2, lost 2. And we went up to Lancashire, who still had a pretty strong team. We had like a young team, but some obviously really good players. And I know there's a bit of a thing in my head, and certainly I think in how people view me as a cricketer around me and white ball cricket, and it's an area that I'm really keen to kind of improve on and do well in, and something I put a lot of time into. And anyway, the final over of that game came down to they needed like 14 to win, and I knew I was going to be bowling it like a few overs out, and it was kind of all set up, and we were playing on one side of Old Trafford, and they kind of put the fans into the stand. So it felt like a good atmosphere. And who's playing? Is it Danny Lamb?
Yes, there? We've had him on the podcast. Great bloke.
Oh, yeah. Is he? Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. He someone who's very like tough to play against, like we were talking about earlier, like those two. I know he got like a couple of scores in the games before to win them close games, and then they had been miles off the pace and he was like 40 not out of like 20 balls or whatever, whacking it, and they needed 14 to win. And I bowled the first ball like a full toss past his face for four byes. That was a bit embarrassing. Then I bowled like a wide. Anyway, we ended up, because they had one wicket left, we ended up winning the game. And that was that's one of the proudest moments just for me, like on a very small personal level, because for me, it was massive pressure. And I know obviously people are going to say that competition was underneath 100, and it was. But you know, for me, that was one of the highest pressure moments I've been in, and to be able to deliver that and to be in that team with a lot of the guys I'd come through with was really special. On a personal level, I loved beating Worcester at Lord's this year. Felt like a really nice moment. You know, that team has 7 or 8 guys who came through the academy, and that group of players is really, and it has a certain bond that I think is maybe like unusual. And so that was a really great win. Like everyone contributed in really nice ways there. I feel like I'm missing. I feel like I'm missing something that's like really present in my mind, but I can't quite put my finger on it. Sorry. I loved like my 2020 debut, where I went for like 40 in 2 overs at Lords this summer. It was just awesome. I played 5 games in that and didn't get a wicket. I think I averaged infinity in 2020 cricket, which is quite an achievement. But it was so fun. That's my overriding memory of it. So whilst there's a lot of work to do, like I'd love to get back out there with that. And actually, sorry, one more point. Worcester this year, one day competition. Martin Anderson whacked 60 off like, or maybe like 50 off like 16 balls at the end of the R innings. And just like he'd been through a fair amount in the weeks preceding that. And to see him go out and demonstrate the remarkable skill and ability he has as one of his good friends was just a really cool moment. And everyone got behind that. So that was pretty cool.
Oh, clearly lots of highlights in the last 4 years.
There's been some average moments as well, but
well, you say that's part and parcel of the cricketing experience, isn't it? You know, you have peaks, troughs, high moments, low moments. That is the nature of the cricketing beast. Of course, in an ideal world, in paradise, we'd have it all our way all the time. You'd always take 5s, you'd always take centuries, but as we all know, that isn't how the game pans out. I mean, let's be honest, as a cricketer, this is what's quite hard, actually, especially with the bat in hand. I'd say, as opposed to the ball, you do fail a lot more times than you succeed. And that is something which you've got to learn very, very early on in your cricketing career. And actually, I suppose in that vein, Ethan, what do you say has been the toughest moment? What do you say has really been the lowest moment from your time at Middlesex so far, maybe from a playing perspective or a personal perspective at the club? Has there been a moment which has, I don't know, almost taken you aback, really, from county cricket at some point?
In the summer of 2020, there's been some difficult moments when I haven't bowled particularly well in games or whatever. But I think you have to learn to deal with that. As you say, I think in the summer of 2020, just off the back of that initial lockdown, we played a pre-season game at Northampton, and I, for a number of reasons, had got myself in not a very good state to play cricket. And I think mentally, physically, skills wise, whatever. It should have been a period after this kind of lockdown and isolation where you could go out and really express and enjoy, and everything should be there. And it just felt so far from that. And I was so far off the pace. And fortunately, I was supported incredibly well over the next few months by people. But that was a time definitely when I questioned whether cricket was something that I would enjoy again, and whether it was something I would be able to do as a job in terms of a literal ability kind of you know, whether I would be able to compete at that level, because I was a long way off the pace and a long way off where I needed to be, as I say, physically and mentally, to kind of to perform at all, or even just be around that. And you know, I was turning up to cricket grounds and just begging it to be 6 o'clock or whatever and go home, really. So I feel very fortunate to not be in that space anymore. But that was, yeah, definitely the lowest, the lowest moment, I think.
Well, Ethan, if you don't mind me asking, really, how did you get yourself out of that rut, I suppose? Because that sounds horrible. Obviously, as a cricket fan and as someone who plays cricket, I mean, yeah, you do have those moments where you question yourself when it comes to this game. And I imagine on a professional level, that's increased by tenfold, if not a hundredfold, in comparison to village cricket. But we do sit in village cricket as well. Some people just go, the love's gone, I'm not going to play anymore. How did you get yourself out of that frame of mind and almost reinvigorate your cricket career from that moment?
Well, I think the first thing to say is that I didn't really. I was alerted. Well, I was supported by a number of people incredibly well, and without them, I certainly wouldn't have been able to, because they actually, and one in particular, opened my eyes to something that was very obvious, but I couldn't see, if that makes sense.
And what was that?
That was a combination of kind of, and I'm aware people have really serious issues with this, I don't want to kind of trivialise it in any way, but it was a combination of overtraining, undereating, overstressing, not being able to relax, and not finding any way of allowing my body or my mind to kind of switch off. And I was basically just, I was about 12 and a half kilos lighter than I had been at the start of the lockdown. I felt I was eating enough and everything should have been there. You know, I was training so hard and I was doing all this stuff, and I thought I was working harder than anyone else and doing all this thing. And it was just really detrimental. And I think, you know, as I say, people do have really serious issues with this, and I want to respect that. But I suffered some kind of a burnout, I suppose you would say. Like, I ran out of mental and physical capacity really to do anything. And it was actually Alan Coleman, who I'd known as academy director through and was a bowling coach, who after that Northants game kind of sat me down and said, like, what's going on? And it basically all came out there. And I couldn't be more thankful to him, to my family, and a few of the lads, particularly in Middlesex, who are so, so supportive. And they really enabled me to see that actually, like, there was something to go towards. And I worried that I definitely wouldn't get that same, like, I wasn't getting nervous before games. I wasn't, like, waking up excited or nervous, because I just didn't. It was kind of apathy, and a fear, really, of what might go wrong. And when I got that feeling, those nerves again in like the pre-season of last year, I was so grateful, because I really worried that that wouldn't come back. So no, I'm incredibly, yeah, I would say people helped me through it. And then, you know, once you start to see a little bit of evidence at the start of that journey, you then think, oh, like, maybe it's not that far away, like with a few more steps. And I think I was lucky the time it came right at the end of that season. I played one game in that 2020 season. I was better than I was in that Northants game, but wasn't up to it. But that was the end of the year. So I then had 6 months, really. And we broke it down and kind of worked through it. And it's an ongoing process in some ways. And with some of the things, around the food and the training, that's, I think, something that is part of my personality and I need to manage constantly. But I feel more equipped and, as I say, very well supported to... Try and get there. So, yeah, no, I'm very sorry. I know it's got very deep. I have a tendency to do that. But, that was kind of the path.
To be honest, Ethan, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And that's why I asked the question. That's why I asked the follow-up question as well, because I'm really interested by this, of course. We do delve into the psychological aspects of the game. It's a massive part, massive, massive part. And I did actually read an article about that. I think it was for the Evening Standard, wasn't it, if I'm not mistaken? You did an interview with them. a while back, and I was very, very interested to learn that. Was that chat with Adam Coleman the catalyst then, in terms of breaking that vicious cycle? Of course, it's not gone completely, as you mentioned right there, it's ongoing even up until this day, but was that the real kickstarter in terms of getting you back onto that right path, per se?
I think it was, because I think up until that point, I know that the only way I can describe it is like having like a cloak pulled off you. I kind of knew in one half of my brain that all these things I was doing were not, you know, were to my detriment. And then the other half, I knew the right stuff to do, because I'm interested in nutrition, I'm interested in training, that kind of stuff. So I was kind of informed that what I was doing was ill-informed. But I thought I was getting away with it. And actually, the approach Coley took really did open my eyes, as you say, to that. And it was kind of the realization that, like, if you keep doing this, you won't be able to play county cricket. You won't be able to be a cricketer. You may have like 5% body fat and you may be able to run for like ages and ages, but when you're sitting on your bed and you don't have a job or you can't play cricket, you're probably not going to be so interested in that. I suppose that was the catalyst, actually. That's the best way of describing it. And then I think I spoke to my mum, my brother, and they had been concerned, but maybe not quite aware of the depth that it went kind of psychologically. And they were just phenomenal in the support they gave me. I think it stemmed from there. And I'm very grateful that I was at a club that cared about me enough to put resources into that. So, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, Ethan. First of all, thank you for sharing that, of course. I mean, I appreciate that again, because I wanted to learn more about it. It's a very, very interesting part of the game. And it's one that we do need to speak more openly about as well. That's something which I do think is very important. I mean, we'll talk about opening up cricket in due course as well, the work that you've done with them in terms of the Heads in the Game series. But it is important to note this as well, because this might actually help someone who's in a similar situation. So I really do appreciate that, Ethan. I sincerely do.
I think sometimes I feel we're in a big kind of culture of oversharing sometimes. And I think maybe whether, you know, should I talk openly about it? And because I don't want it to come across as a kind of, and when I spoke to Will for the Evening Standard in the summer, I didn't want it to come across as a kind of like some kind of martyr, like phoenix from the fire, like, oh, look at what I've been through. Because it's really not that. I think you actually articulated nice there. I think a lot of people have things that they have to cope with, and they may be more severe or less severe. They may be in different areas, but professional sport is high pressure, and it seems to cause a lot of, either it brings out certain personality traits or it kind of sparks things in other areas of your life. I think that can be difficult for people. And I think a lot of people experience those to a greater or lesser extent. And I think creating an environment where, it's not to say you have to tell everyone all the time. And some people won't be comfortable with sharing to a degree that I might be, for example. But just, I think, creating an environment where dialogue is possible, even if it's not always the option that's taken, is important. And, you know, reading Dustin Melton, I know we mentioned it before we started recording, Dustin Melton's article. And that was, you know, a hugely brave thing to do, to step out and speak so openly about that. And it will help people. As I say, it's not the path that everyone would choose to take. And that's fine, but it may help some people. I think that's important. So, yeah,
it most certainly is. And yeah, that article from Dustin was one of our first ever guests. We're talking when we were in the single digits. As you can tell, we've interviewed a lot of counter cricketers, to be honest, Ethan. But
yeah,
when I read that, I'm going to be honest, that was absolutely heartbreaking for me, because I've been speaking to Dustin for a while now. I've been speaking to him since 2020, and even though we've been speaking relatively frequently, even I didn't know it to that extent. I'm going to be completely honest. The amount of stuff that he's gone through in the last 12 to 18 months is staggering. And again, yeah. He's got such mental fortitude, such grit. He's a fantastic character as well. Good seam bowler. Wishing him all the best for Derbyshire this season. But for him to come out so openly again, I think it is very, very brave, first and foremost, and courageous. But also in the long run, it's also helpful. And it's almost, again, we alluded to that theme earlier about breaking down the perceptions of professional sports people. I think it helps that. And it makes you realise that, again, there is that human element. Someone who's done this fantastically is Tyson Fury, in my personal opinion. The guy is the heavyweight champion of the world. He was outstanding against Deontay Wilder, and yet he's had some very, very well-charted issues with his mental health. And yet he's been so open. He's been so frank. He's had some great conversations, one which, to be honest, I'd highly recommend for those interested in psychology in particular. But for someone, the heavyweight champion of the world, and you think of all of the, not the stereotypes, but the perceptions of that title, and yet he's absolutely broken them. And behind it, you realise that there's a normal bloke. And even he, one of the most strongest, one of the most physically fit, he is up there as well. And one of the most skilled fighters in the world also has vulnerability. And I think from time to time, it's important for sports people to show that to some extent, obviously, to which they're comfortable.
No, I agree. I was actually just listening while I was making dinner to a podcast. Paddy Acton started this new series, which I've really enjoyed so far. And this with Chad Laclos, the swimmer.
Butterfly.
Exactly. And he actually, on the podcast, gives an exclusive into some of the things that he's dealt with. And I think, right, everyone has mental health, and hopefully most people's is really good a lot of the time. But if it's not, then sometimes for some people, talking about it can really help. And seeing, like with anything, seeing role models, was one of the big things that helped me, was actually when I started speaking to someone, which was through the PCA and the support that they'd offered. I say that because I think it's important. That was, you know, vital for me. So I just wanted to give them a shout out. When she said to me, it's like, this is not the first time I've seen this. You're not alone in the widest sense of the word. That actually gave me, you know, like other people have been through this and come through it. And I think if you can see people, sometimes role models, then, or whatever you want to call them, then yeah, that can be really helpful.
100%. And to be honest, Ethan, thank you for all of this. I mean, again, this is really interesting for me, and I hope for some people out there as well, it's also helpful. You know, it's also assisting you. 100%, because this is a massive part of the game with cricket, and this is so cliche, and I understand that, and there'll be people rolling their eyes as I divulge into this sentence, but it is so mentally driven. It's 90% mental and 10% physical, because you can have the absolute best technique in the world. You can be the best batter, best bowler, best fielder, whatever. If your head isn't in the right space, you're not going to perform to the best of your ability. And that is so, so important. So yes, we did get a little bit profound. We did get a little bit philosophical, which I expected from a theology student, to be honest, Ethan. I had to bring that up.
Don't read too much into that.
I had to bring it up at some point, though, you know, in our background research. But I appreciate that. And as I said, hopefully for the listeners out there, that will prove to be very, very helpful indeed. But talking of, I suppose, the playing sense again, in 2021, Ethan, before we get on to our Twitter questions for tonight and wrap up tonight's episode.
Probably no one sent in questions.
Oh, we did. We had a couple. We did have a couple. But in terms of the 2021 season, how would you describe your personal performances? Because in the county championship, I just want to read these out really for the listeners out there. In terms of stats-wise, this is remarkable. It really is. 52 wickets at 20.84 for Middlesex. You're in the top 8 wicket takers in the entire county championship across all of the divisions. Again, how would you summarise the 2021 season in your own words? Was it a little bit surreal, would you say?
Yes, it was surreal in the sense that I felt at some stage during the year, it was like, actually, no, I don't think it was surreal. I worked really hard and I did a lot of you know, like everyone does, you do a lot of preparation and you put a lot of emotional and physical energy into trying to get yourself in the best place. I didn't expect that I would get that kind of run of games. And I suppose I kept thinking at points that it would stop at some stage. I'm hesitant to say that because, you know, it's not like I took loads of fivers or anything. I was really fortunate to have a run inside. That gave me great confidence. And I'm under no illusions that I bowled on helpful pitches in a style or pitches which suit people who bowl my style. And that is something that kind of a stigma or a commentary perhaps that I'm really keen to overcome when I develop my game so it's suitable for a number of different conditions. Like one of the things that really bugs me from last year is that, you know, in fourth innings is when I played, sides chased over 300 against us. And as I grew into the season, and I think maybe grew into myself a little bit, and felt like I want to lead that attack, because I do want to lead that attack. That's what I want to do. I know it's a phenomenally gifted seam kind of contingent at Middlesex and far more skillful bowlers than me, but I want to be the most reliable, the person who they turn to, the guy who leads that attack. The fact I couldn't get it done in those three games, in those fourth innings, and I didn't bowl how I wanted, really frustrated me. And I actually felt that, you know, whilst there were some performances I was happy with, the overall haul and people's maybe like surprise in the nicest way at it covered up a few of the areas that I really want to improve on. And so they're very much at the forefront of my mind. I'm pleased that it went well and in some areas, but there's, you know, I feel I could be so much better. And I feel there's so many things that I did that I hopefully have now improved on and that I want to improve on. I don't want to dwell really. I also think I got rewards in some games where other guys bowled phenomenally well, and I bowled a lot of overs with new ball on helpful pitches. It's stupid to not appreciate that. But there were some good things, yeah.
Well, first and foremost, Ethan, I think you do yourself a little bit of a disservice there. To take over 50 wickets in a championship season, that's an immense achievement in itself. So you should be proud of the wicket tally. And obviously, there's things you can always improve. Would you say it's a case of proud but never satisfied? There's always that next benchmark. There's always that next milestone that can be achieved in your cricket.
I think so. I think one of the things I love about being able to do this as a job is that you literally, there is no ceiling in terms of I'm going to try and keep getting better and better. And it is a cliche, and I think it's a cliche because it's probably what a lot of people think, which is I'm going to try and keep getting better and better until I can't and see where that takes me. It may take me, you know, where I would really love to go, or it may take me to one more game for Middlesex and that's it. But if I know that I've given it absolutely everything, then I will be able to sit here and speak to you again maybe one day and be like, yeah, I was happy.
Well, fingers crossed, Ethan. I mean, to be honest, you're always welcome back on. I've absolutely loved this chat. We're not even finished for tonight. It's already been a mammoth episode. Probably courtesy of my ramblings. I do apologise for that, Ethan. But no, fingers crossed. And obviously, wish you all the best of luck heading into this season and, of course, beyond. But heading into our Twitter questions, we'll start with the first one from Neil. Now, Neil is a Gloucestershire fan. And this is a really interesting question, actually, because this is quite a niche part of your career. And it was the loan spell at Gloucestershire. So the question from Neil was, how useful did you find your time on loan at Gloucestershire back in 2019? That was only for a couple of weeks, wasn't it, for the cricket festival?
Yeah, it was two games at Cheltenham. I would say that it was one of the most transformative and important experiences of my career. I felt I was bowling well in the second team. I wasn't getting into the first team. I was in like every squad for about 10 weeks and didn't play. And that was frustrating at that age. I wanted to play. I wanted to get better. I wasn't really playing any cricket because I was running drinks. And I think, you know, that's something everyone goes to. But going to Gloucester, and it was really just a fresh experience. I didn't know anyone there really. I knew Higo a little bit. And I knew Dave Bartlett, the physio. But the kind of freedom was, they literally just like, I felt they were doing me a favour. But I think they felt obviously grateful because they didn't have any bowlers. So they were like, oh, here's the ball, there you go, go and bottle. And Thorpe's bowling coach there was like, just took all the pressure off. And I just felt really, I just loved it. And they could not have been more welcoming. Like, interesting going to a different environment, like much smaller feel maybe. You know, in London, we're all quite spread out and stuff. It was a bit different there. And they just couldn't have been nice. And I loved it. And there was two great games. They went down literally to last over. But it was, in terms of the kind of responsibility and the feeling like I could go in and actually do a decent job, that was, it was really important for me.
Well, I'm not surprised by that, to be honest. They're a great club. I absolutely love Gloss, love Cheltenham as well. Actually, I was there for the festival in 2019. I was there for the T20 match. I was there specifically to see AB de Villiers, and he got injured the night before.
Oh, no.
It was tough luck, but I will say this about Cheltenham. That really is up there in terms of elite tier outgrounds. Remarkable. The college is spectacular. The outfield is... Is it?
That could be. Yeah. Well, I've been really lucky to play three games that we played there this summer as well. It's phenomenal. Yeah, it's so good.
It is indeed. Again, for anyone out there who hasn't been to Cheltenham, you've got to go. Highly recommend it. The cricket connoisseur recommends it. That's all I'll say. It's absolutely fantastic. And Neil, thank you for sending the question in. That's a really, really interesting question. Again, a very niche part of your career, but very clearly an important and integral one. And in terms of our second Twitter question then, this is from a man who we've already spoken about in tonight's episode, a certain Dustin Melton. Now, Dustin's question is as follows. How have you found the work that you've been doing with opening up cricket? And I suppose, Ethan, before you answer that, could you just give the listeners who aren't familiar with who opening up cricket are, could you just give them some background into the wonderful work that they do?
Yeah, opening up cricket is a charity set up about 10 years ago by Mark Boynes. It's a charity which uses the kind of vehicle of cricket to open up a conversation around mental health, goes into clubs, schools and universities and tries to encourage dialogue around these topics and educate people as to the nature of the mind in the sporting context and how we might react to things specifically to do with cricket. Also to create an environment where people feel that they can talk about these issues that may cross into their normal life. And the idea, I think, is that in cricket clubs and cricket environments, we have a ready-made support structure that we'd be silly, really, not to use and not to lean on when we need to. I'm really fortunate to be involved with them. It's a subject obviously that we've touched upon, I feel strongly about, and you know, talking is something that's really helped me. Recently I've been doing some interviews with county players. So far I've interviewed Max Holden, Ryan Higgins and Kyle Abbott, and I hope to continue that. Really, I think to try and, I think it's probably for players and for other people who feel under stress that they're in stressful environments, just to talk about it and kind of expose things that I think everyone feels that aren't talked about. You know, one of my beliefs is that mental health now is a very like vogue topic and is mentioned a lot on the surface, but still isn't really dug into properly. And still when people have issues around their mental health, well-being or psychological stress, it's kind of, okay, well, like, we'll push them in the corner and, you know, go and speak to a psychologist and then come back when you're fixed. And it shouldn't be a reactive, it shouldn't always be a reactive response. I think if we can encourage dialogue around it, encourage education around it, then actually we can start to prevent these things, because everyone does have that mental health and we sit somewhere on the continuum and, you know, we might slip from day to day. So yeah, sorry, that's kind of my relationship with them, and I hope to do more with them and be more active going forward. Mark is so committed. He's a volunteer effectively, and he's a teacher, and he runs it in his spare time. I don't know how he does what he does, but it's a phenomenal job. So very privileged to be involved.
Yeah, they're a wonderful organisation. They really are. And for the listeners out there who want to learn a bit more about what Opening Up Cricket provide in terms of the workshops, in terms of those online articles written by a certain Ethan Bamber, we will be leaving the links to their website in the podcast description below. I cannot recommend checking them out and their wonderful work enough. They're a fantastic organisation. And to be honest, Ethan, as a cricket fan, I've absolutely loved reading the series. The ones with Max Holden in particular really, really interested me, that one. Same with Ryan Higgins, because his cricketing journey has been, again, quite unconventional, hasn't it? Going from Zimbabwe to Berkshire, and then he's gone from Lords to Bristol. It's not really been the most orthodox route into the game, I suppose, in a county sense. But again, we'll leave the links to those in the podcast description. Yeah. Definitely worth a quick read if you're a cricket badger, such as myself. But Ethan, before we say our final goodbyes for tonight's episode, one final question, which the Middlesex fans will be wanting me to ask, I suppose, heading into the 2022 season.
Yeah.
What are your goals and aspirations for this upcoming season in a Saxes shirt? What would you like to achieve for the London-based club?
Promotion.
Yep.
Qualify for at least one of the finals of one of the one-day comps. Personally, this is going to be really cliche, but I'm trying to work on my psychological approach, so I'm going to stick with it, is to just commit to everything I do and make sure that I'm as good as I can be. And hopefully, I trust, you know, that will, one, get me in the side, which is going to be competitive, and two, hopefully do a good job for the lads. So, yeah, that's me. And also score a few more bloody runs.
Yeah. 50 here, century there. That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, I'll start with 20, but yeah.
Work our way up gradually. But Ethan, I'll tell you what, it goes without saying, but myself and all of us here at the County Cricket Podcast, wishing both yourself and Middlesex all the very best of luck heading into this season. It's going to be an absolutely brilliant year of county cricket. I've got no doubt about that. We've got some great domestic talent, of which Ethan is one. We've got some outstanding overseas players as well. Shaheen Shah Afridi has got me very tempted to get the train down to London Marylebone. Very, very tempted. He's an outstanding player.
That's class. Can't wait.
Well, yeah, for some people, you're lucky enough to bowl with him, so that'd be good, Ethan. Learn as much as you can from Shaheen Shah Afridi. But yeah, I mean, that is basically it from us two here at the County Cricket Podcast for tonight's episode. Ethan, do you just have anything to plug or promote? Any social media channels, websites, anything like that?
No, just thank you very much for having me. I would encourage just people, just have a look at Opening Up, because it's really great work that they do. So thank you.
100%. Well, Ethan, it's been an absolute pleasure. You're always welcome back here on the County Cricket Podcast. And yeah, fingers crossed, we'll have a catch up at the end of the season after, 60 wickets or something like that. We'll have to wait and see. Who knows what the 2022 season has in store. But that is basically it from us two here at the County Cricket Podcast for tonight's episode. To all of you wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.